We'll proceed to the fourth case of the day for argument, U.S. versus Foster. Mr. Gross.
Yes.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Government, please, court. My name is Chad Groves. I'm the attorney for Daryl Foster. I also represented him at the state court level, and I was appointed to represent him once the federal authorities determined to charge him in federal court. We're here on a similar issue as the court heard the first case this morning. I think the standard the court should use is de novo, because our argument and allegation is there was insufficient evidence at the sentencing hearing for the trial judge to determine that the handgun that Mr. Foster possessed was also used in connection with a crime of violence. There was no plea agreement in the case. Mr. Foster, upon his indictment and after the case progressed, determined with my assistance that he desired to plead guilty without a plea agreement and wanted to leave his sentencing up to the court. At the sentencing hearing, Mr. Foster did in fact admit that he possessed the gun, did in fact admit that he was a convicted felon and therefore making that possession illegal.
He also admitted that he fired the gun, and that's what the court based its application of the enhancement on?
Well, actually, in the pre-sentence investigation report, we objected to that finding and filed our objections with the court, and also in the soliloquy that Mr. Foster had with the sentencing judge, the trial court, he admitted to having possession of the gun, and on page 14 of my brief, he further stated that he didn't admit to shooting the gun. He's not guilty of shooting the gun, only possessing the gun, Your Honor.
I thought during the plea hearing he later admitted that he did fire the gun to try to break up a fight, and that he also acknowledged that the law enforcement agents, the ATF agents' statements about a witness identifying him as the person who had fired the shot was also correct.
Well, in the
there were several sworn admissions in the plea colloquy that the district court based the enhancement on.
In the affidavit of probable cause used at the state court level, the investigating police officer indicated that there were two witnesses who were stopped leaving the scene who stated that handgun was discharged, and also a detective indicated that Mr. Foster had spoken to him about firing the handgun. However, at the sentencing hearing, neither of the two citizen witnesses nor the investigative officer appeared and testified as such.
Well, that doesn't matter if there was a sworn statement from the defendant himself admitting to having fired the gun.
Well, during the sentencing hearing...
I'm talking about the plea hearing.
I understand, Your Honor.
I know he recanted at the sentencing hearing, but that's sort of beside the point. The court was entitled to rely on his prior sworn admissions, despite his later recantation.
Well, perhaps, and I hate to speculate about what Mr. Foster's state of mind was at his plea hearing, if Your Honor is, if you are correct in your interpretation of his sworn testimony, that I think it's clear his testimony at the time of the sentencing is more detailed rather than just a yes or no, and his intention to plead guilty as to what he was charged with is clear. If you look to what Mr. Foster was charged with, what he was indicted for, and what he pled guilty to, was the illegal possession of a firearm by...
Right. I understand what he pled guilty to, but this is the statement he made to the court at the plea colloquy. Two guys jumped one of my friends, James Roshan. As I went to break up the fight, you know, I grabbed a gun out of the vehicle of a truck and shot it in there to break up the fight and took him in the house. And a witness even stated that I went to the truck and then took the gun out and shot it in there to break up the fight. That's more than a yes, sir, no, sir to the court. That's an admission in some detail out of his own mouth that he did it, making this particular appeal somewhat frivolous, it seems to me.
Well, Your Honor, I endeavored to definitely not bring a frivolous appeal. My argument, in essence, is that the trial court should have taken into consideration the evidence presented at the sentencing hearing.
It's not limited to that evidence.
Understand your...
And to argue that the court was not entitled to, and on extremely solid ground, taking into consideration your client's sworn admissions at the plea hearing is a frivolous argument.
You apparently didn't raise the issue whether this firing the gun was a violent crime giving rise to an enhancement, which would seem to me to be a question of raised some questions on the United States versus Smith, which we recently decided.
And my argument...
You haven't raised that issue, though, have you?
At the state court level, Mr. Foster was charged with two counts, possession of a handgun by a felon, and also criminal recklessness based upon his firing a handgun. If the court determines, this court, not the trial court, determines that Mr. Foster's inconsistent statements that the trial court could rely upon one versus the other of Mr. Foster's inconsistent statements standing alone, then I can concede based upon the state court charge and my experience that firing a handgun.
No, I'm talking about the sentence.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
The issue here is the enhancement of the sentence, and you have to use the gun in connection with a crime of violence to get the enhancement. I'm just saying that the recent decision of this court in United States versus Smith would seem to make that an issue. But I don't think you've raised that issue. I don't know what the government's got to say about that.
So. Well, Your Honor, I believe that my intent in my argument was that there was insufficient evidence that Foster, my client, used the firearm in relation to any crime of violence. And that's what I'm here for with regard to this appeal.
You're saying that, Mr. Groves, even if the district court found that he did fire, you're still saying that he didn't fire it in a crime of violence setting?
Well, my argument was, I think the case law is clear that firing a handgun in and of itself under the circumstances of a case such as this can be considered a crime of violence. There was no evidence that Mr. Foster was shooting at an animal or in a hunting situation.
Well, it's an act of recklessness. That seemed to be the issue in the Smith case.
Yes, Your Honor. I agree with you. I'm not sure
that your concession is completely in accord with the law in the books, but you seem to have made it, I gather.
Well, Your Honor, my ultimate position was in this case is that there was insufficient evidence to establish by preponderance of the evidence that Mr. Foster's sentence should be enhanced based upon the finding that the gun was used in a crime of violence, given the fact that Mr. Foster, albeit after the plea soliloquy at the sentencing hearing, denied shooting the gun. And
how do we get past the district judge accepting the acknowledgement at the plea and not finding credible the recantation? I mean, that's a tough hurdle for you, and obviously for us, in the sense that the deference to the great deference to the district judge in this setting.
Well, ultimately, although he may have spoken otherwise, as Your Honor has indicated, ultimately, I think when we get into thinking and assuming, I know that's dangerous ground, sir, but ultimately I think that Mr. Foster believed that he was pleading guilty as charged at the plea agreement or at the plea hearing. And he was, in fact, charged with possession of a handgun by a convicted felon or a firearm by a convicted felon. Ultimately, the court found that he was an armed career criminal. That was one of the issues why he pled open, so to speak, through the case law that was pointed out by the government and also a review of his past record in the case files. We were unable to challenge that here today. That would bring us to an issue, I guess, Your Honor, where if the court did find my argument convincing, I believe Judge Young may only be able to sentence Mr. Foster to 180 months versus 188 months. And I thought about that a lot on my way up here about, well, should I be appealing 8 months? And, you know, I apologize for wasting the court's time or the government's time, but I think 8 months is sufficient.
All right.
If there are any other questions, I see my time's up.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Groves.
Thank you.
Mr. Schellenbarger.
May it please the court, my name is Todd Schellenbarger. I'm an assistant United States attorney in the Southern District of Indiana, and I represent the United States in this appeal. The only argument that Mr. Foster makes in his appeal is that the district court did not have sufficient evidence to find by a preponderance that he used a firearm in connection with a crime of violence. He disputes the factual determination by the district court that he used
the
firearm.
How about the issue that I'm talking about? You haven't said a word about that either, have you?
What issue is that?
There's a case on the books in this court which would raise, I think, a serious question whether it's a crime of violence. But we haven't heard anything about that.
Your Honor, it's the obligation of Mr. Foster to select his issues on appeal and make his arguments, and that case has not been cited or presented to the court.
But under these circumstances, it might have been appropriate for you to discuss the issue, but go ahead.
And our focusing on the issue that he did raise, there's ample evidence in the record to support the district court's determination that he used the firearm. Some of that has been offered by one of the judges, and the evidence is that we have pointed out in the brief is not limited to just that evidence that was submitted during the sentencing hearing. The court is free to go back into the change of plea hearing and also consider that evidence. And in the change of plea hearing, the case agent testified, providing a detailed summary of the facts surrounding the incident that led to Mr. Foster's arrest and his eventual indictment, including that two witnesses that the Evansville Police Department received a call about a shooting incident. They went to investigate. They found two witnesses driving away from the shooting incident who described Mr. Foster's clothing and identified someone as Darrell as having shot a firearm at a party at a house. The investigators then went to the house, found Mr. Foster in the basement, dressed as the witnesses said he would be dressed, wearing a bright yellow outfit, and they also found the firearm that was discharged outside the residence in that basement where Mr. Foster was found. He was taken from there, interviewed after a Miranda warning, and admitted in his interview that he fired the firearm. After this summary was presented at the change of plea hearing by the case agent, Mr. Foster was called up to offer his testimony to the district court about the facts of the case. He was first asked if the case agent's summary was accurate. He indicated that it was, and then he went on to provide his own version of what events occurred, and in that version he stated that he fired the weapon.
Let's take all that for granted, that he fired the weapons. It's still an issue whether this is a crime of violence under the analysis of United States versus Smith, isn't it? Are you acquainted with that case?
Your Honor, I am acquainted with that case in my preparation just very recently for this argument. That case was not decided at the time, but the district court had to evaluate this information, or that the parties had to make their arguments to the district court. And it's difficult to say with certainty how that would come out if the parties had a chance to make that argument in the light of that case, which they did not. Furthermore, as I pointed out, Mr. Foster has not asserted that opinion. In addition...
Counsel, why don't you try making the argument now? You've said you're familiar with the case.
Well, Your Honor, I mean, the case would be a concern with regard to the criminal recklessness conviction and the armed career criminal enhancement. The case did leave some room for determination whether or not a particular criminal recklessness amounted to an intentional or knowing act rather than a purely reckless act. However, I think an even more important concern is if the court will look through the pre-sentence report in paragraph 22, as well as paragraph 33, the court will find that there are actually four prior convictions that may in fact qualify as crimes of violence. Of course, we have the battery and armed robbery and the criminal recklessness, the three that were the focus of the court's decision that he was an armed career criminal, a district court's decision. And the court and the parties essentially stopped their argument after three. However, there is a fourth that may indeed qualify as a crime of violence that wasn't even considered at the district court level in the arguments and wasn't necessary at that time given the
Smith
opinion.
What is that conviction?
It's a possession of a sawed-off shotgun conviction, Your Honor, which is identified in paragraph 22 and described.
It's a possession and a use conviction?
It is possession of a sawed-off shotgun. And it remains to be seen whether possession of a sawed-off shotgun will remain within the definition of a crime of violence after Smith and after the Supreme Court's decision that led to the Smith decision, Begay. But prior to those decisions, this court has ruled that possession of a sawed-off shotgun is a crime of violence that fits within the definition of the guidelines for a crime of violence. And that definition is very similar to the armed career criminal definition. So Mr. Foster has not raised the Smith case after he filed his brief, and it wasn't issued until after he filed his brief, and indeed after the government filed its brief. The district court did not have the benefit of any analysis, nor did the parties have the benefit of any analysis of that opinion and argument about that. And the government may indeed have been able to argue, and the district court may have been able to find that fourth sawed-off shotgun conviction would, in fact, add up to the three necessary for an armed career criminal sentencing. Are there any further questions?
Apparently not. Thank you, Mr. Schindler.
Without any help.
Mr. Groves, your time has expired, but you may have a minute if you want some rebuttal. I said your time has expired, but you may have a minute.
Thank you.
Without attempting to dodge Your Honor's question, government's correct in that U.S. v. Smith was decided after the ultimate preparations for this case, and today were prepared by counsel and I. While I'm not familiar with the case of United States v. Smith, it very well may affect this court's decision in the case at hand at the ultimate issue on armed career offender. And that being the case, if the court would so desire and with leave of court, I would be more than happy to file a supplemental brief alleging how, in my opinion, that case may affect the court's consideration.
The court has decided that not to request that. We're aware of the case.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Groves, and thank you, Mr. Schellenbach.